from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm John Myers, and for Michael Krasny. Election Day is less than 3 weeks away. It's the biggest outing so far for California's relatively new election system. After June's primary, after all, only two names were left on the ballot for each office, statewide and legislative. The biggest losers in that system, it seems, third parties, once guaranteed a spot on the fall ballot, now all but gone. This hour on Forum, we'll be talking about the fate of third parties in California, minor parties in the politics and elections of the state, a setback or a death sentence for third parties. That and more coming up on Forum. From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm John Myers, in for Michael Krasny this morning. On June 8, 2010, California voters made a big change to the state's electoral rules. All voters could cast a ballot for all candidates in the June primaries, but only two candidates. The top two vote-getters, regardless of party, would advance to November. And Election Day is right around the corner here in November. 2012 was the first use of the top two system. This past June was the second go-around. Now, while the impact of this new system is still being assessed, one thing, though, seems clear. It has been no friend to minor parties, third parties in California. In fact, some argue that the top two system has all but silenced third parties from their familiar place on the ballot in November elections. This hour on Forum is part of our ongoing California Election Watch 2014 coverage. We're going to examine the fate of third parties under the new election rules in California and find out, are they viable and how they are adapting to this new universe? And let me introduce our guest to begin with. Michael Feinstein is a member of the California Green Party, the state coordinator of the Green Party, and is a former city council member and mayor of Santa Monica, and joins us by phone. Good morning, Michael Feinstein.
Good morning. Thanks for having the Green Party.
Happy to have you here. Also with us by phone this morning is Chad Peace, who is the legal strategist for the Independent Voter Project, which is a nonpartisan organization that encourages independent voters to participate in the electoral process. They were big backers of the top two primary, which was Prop 14. Chad Peace, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Also joining us a little bit later here in our studio is Eric McGee, policy fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California, author of Open Primaries, which examines the impacts of Prop 14. And also joining us this morning from our studios in Sacramento, or actually by phone in Sacramento, is Kim Alexander, the president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, nonpartisan organization, of course, dedicated to voters and electoral issues. And actually, Kim, you're in our studio in Sacramento. So good morning.
Good morning, John.
Well, so let's, Michael Feinstein, let me begin with you. I mean, a lot of what we're going to talk about in this hour is the top two primary system in California, which was created by voters in 2010 as Prop 14, but the impact that that had on parties like yours, the Green Party. Let me actually, if I may begin, quite frankly, a little broader with one of the questions people ask about third parties, which is why they're important, why you're a part of one. I mean, to be frank, they have small registration numbers compared to Democrats and Republicans and have rarely won elections. So why are third parties so important?
Well, for California to have a 21st century democracy, it should have a political system in which the diversity of views in our state are able to be represented through that through our democratic system, and different parties are there to represent those different views. The trouble is that our antiquated single-seat district, winner-take-all system, makes that very hard to occur, and the small number of people in some of these parties is a result of the fact that the system itself makes them less viable. When you compare us to Western democracies that we're usually compared to economically, et cetera, they have systems of proportional representation with multi-seat districts, and they have many viable parties. So we shouldn't be under the illusion that smaller parties aren't representative. It's the system that makes them less representative, not their ideologies. And Top 2 has taken us even further away from a system where voters have a real chance to vote for and elect representatives who represent their views by having only two candidates on the ballot, making primary elections more expensive, and eliminating write-in voting.
We'll talk a little bit about that. So the Top 2 primary system, which we created in 2010, has had that impact because, as I said in the opening of this conversation, third parties had a place guaranteed on the November ballot. You no longer have that.
That's correct. We're no longer on the November ballot, so now this is producing false majorities. With having only two candidates on the ballot in November, you automatically get a majority, one winning over the other, but that's a false majority because it's not really representing the spectrum of voters. Number two, top two has made it much harder for candidates from smaller parties to get on the ballot, and then we go through all this extra work, and then we're only on the ballot until June. The number of signatures we needed to get on the ballot for statewide office went up 7,000% under the top two, and between 1992 and 2010, the state's four smaller traditional minor parties, the Libertarians, Greens, Peace and Freedom, and American Independent, we averaged 127 candidates a year between us in the primary. Under top two in 2012, 17 candidates. In 2014, 13 candidates. This is for state legislature and Congress. So not only are we eliminated in November, and people thinking that there's actually a choice there and a real majority, but they're not, but it's harder for us to even get on the ballot in the primary. So we're being disappeared very quickly by the system.
Michael Feinstein is a state coordinator with the California Green Party, Green Party of California. We should mention here, too, that there are seven parties at this point officially recognized in California. That's the American Independent Party, the Americans Elect Party, though there are some questions about whether that party continues to have its formal recognition in the years to come. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, we know. The Green Party, which Michael Feinstein is a member of. The Libertarian Party and the Peace and Freedom Party. There are other parties, Michael Feinstein, who want to have recognition. And I think what you were saying there at the end is you think it's going to be harder for them to be recognized under the way that the top two primary system changed those rules.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't be heard, you know, nobody knows you're there. And it makes it increasingly hard for us to get out the message. And one of the ironies of this is that the Green Party of California, we've been on the ballot, we started in 1990 and been on the ballot since 1992. We've had over 800 of our party members elected to municipal and county office, including myself as a two-term city council member in Santa Monica. So this is not a case, 800 of our members, this is not a case that we have some fringe ideology that isn't representative of people in the state. It's easier to get elected on a municipal and county level. It's harder in the single-seat winner-take-all system that we operate under. And the fact is the engine of our democracy is broken. And what top two does is just change the taillight. We have to get rid of this single-seat system and go to multi-seat districts with proportional representation.
There's a larger issue there, of course, that you're talking about, Michael, and maybe we'll get to that in this hour. But that's Michael Feinstein of the Green Party of California. Let me bring in Chad Peace. Chad is the legal strategist for the Independent Voter Project, which have been big backers of the top two primary system. Chad, you've heard what Michael and other third party members have said, that they think there is less choice on the ballot now than ever before, and they are directly attacked, impacted by the top two primary. What do you say to that?
Sure. And let me preface my answer by suggesting that Michael and I are probably a lot closer in terms of our angst with the political election system, as you know, our position on this narrower issue of top two might suggest. But the first thing I think is that's important for us from our viewpoint is that, you know, Michael started with it. It's important for democracy. We need electoral reform to, you know, protect our democracy. Well, the root of democracy is people. And what top two did, and what people don't talk about enough, is it fundamentally changed the purpose of our elections. As you know, under the traditional system, the purpose of the primaries are to elect representatives to represent the party. So the taxpayers fund a system that the purpose serves private parties. What top two did was create a nonpartisan system, and it changed the purpose about being from party leadership to people leadership. So I think the first thing we need to do is understand that top two created a nonpartisan system, and for the first time, the rules are the same for every single voter, every single candidate, and every single party is treated exactly the same under top two. And so the fundamental difference in the new system and the old isn't that it's not about parties. It's about voters. And if we want a democracy, we have to treat all voters the same. I think parties have a crucial, third parties and Republicans and Democrats, they all have a crucial role in our democracy. And they're all private organizations with the private right of association, and they should all be treated the same. But our state As far as our taxpayer dollars go, the state should fund an election system that treats every voter the same. And there are a lot of Green Party voters. There's lots of peace and freedom and libertarian. But by far, the fastest growing group of the electorate are voters that have said, I don't want to associate with any party at all. And so are we going to have a democracy that is conducted for people, or are we going to have a democracy that's conducted for parties? And our argument is that when the state gets involved in creating a fair election process, the only way to make it truly fair is to treat everybody the same.
Okay. Chad, let me jump in just for a moment because I want to bring in our other guests. But before I do that, just because you've raised a point that I think Michael Feinstein should answer here. Michael Feinstein from the Green Party, Chad Peace says elections should not be about parties. And so that's why the top two is a better system. Can you answer that?
Yeah, this is a real fallacy, attacking parties to reduce voter choice. The fact is that there's a large number of people who don't associate with the two larger parties because those parties aren't very representative of them. But a single-seat, winner-take-all system generally produces only two large parties, and therefore parties that would be representative of the range of voters in California aren't viable under a winner-take-all single-seat system. Countries that have proportional representation don't have these large number of independent voters because parties that would represent their diversity are viable and members join them and vote for them. This whole argument is absolutely backwards of attacking parties in this way. It's just taking us in exactly the wrong direction.
Okay.
And playing upon the idea of increasing independent voters, they're a symptom of the problem, not a reason to reduce choice.
Okay, let me get some of my other guests in here. That's Michael Feinstein from the Green Party. Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation. It seems like to me, and we should remind people again, you know, what we're talking about here is the electoral change that we made in 2010, that voters made, which says that candidates, the top two vote getters, regardless of party, move on to November. Only those two names appear on the November ballot. There seems to be, Kim Alexander, still some unsettledness about the operation of elections in California. Do you think that affects voters who are trying to, I don't know, find a candidate that speaks to them?
Absolutely. I mean, we have to remember we have all kinds of voters in California. We have people who are highly engaged and joined in political parties and people who vote infrequently and some people who are sitting on the sidelines altogether, not voting at all. And I think that a lot of us who work in politics and elections get really wrapped up in some of the nitty gritty and lose sight of what the perspective is like for the voter. And, you know, we hear from voters questions like, oh, top two, does that mean that I get to vote for two candidates? You know, my first and second choice, I think it's like a ranked choice voting issue. Or we hear people saying now, why are there no Republican candidates on my contest for assembly on my ballot? And, you know, so there's a pretty big information gap. And I think the challenge for election officials and for supporters is to make sure that voters do understand the new rules that we're playing by. And that's one of the things that we're doing at the California Voter Foundation. And through our collaboration with the Future of California Elections, we just learned yesterday about a new report that was done by the Center for Civic Design for the League of Women Voters of California. And they surveyed infrequent voters about their understanding of the top two. And they found just resounding confusion out there for voters on how this works. So we have a lot of work to do. If we're going to operate the system, continue to operate the system, we need to do a better job of explaining to voters the rules of the road.
Let me ask Eric McGee, who joins us here in studio, policy fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. Eric's done you've done a lot of work in researching the top two primary. We've now had three statewide elections since the top two primary system went into effect. Primary election in 2012, general election in 2012, primary election just this past June. What has been the reality as we look at the data for third parties in these elections? What I mean, you know, we talk a lot about what could happen. What has happened so far?
Well, what has happened is that they've been pretty much eliminated from fall competition. So, you know, before you, as has been discussed here, the system we had before, if you ran any candidate in the primary as a member of a particular party, that party would be guaranteed a spot in the fall. That's no longer the case, and in both the primary elections that we've had so far under this system, the minor party candidates have had a really hard time getting out of the primary stage. And in fact, in this year, the three minor party candidates who are on the ballot in the fall were all write-in candidates in the primary. So it's they write-ins in contests where the incumbent was not otherwise contested by a major party candidate. So it's clear that the new system is hard on these parties. There's no doubt.
There's also a change too in who moves on to November. You know, we've got voters now looking at their ballots across California. And they see and they saw this in 2012, but let's say they forgot about it or they didn't vote. It always happens. They've also now got the candidates from the same party. So they may have two Democrats in some races. We have a very contested state assembly race here in San Francisco, or Republicans, only two Republicans, as we have some of those in Southern California. That is a big change in terms of who they get to pick for these elective offices on November 4th.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And we've had quite a number of those contests in both. Both this year and 2 years ago, so it's not like it's totally rare. And I think Kim is right in the sense that voters are not always entirely aware, and I'm not super optimistic that they will eventually become aware that this is the system that we use. I think most people are going to kind of come to elections, no matter how hard we try to educate them. I think we can do some education, but I think a lot of voters are still going to come to this system and, you know, sort of a little bit puzzled. They'll just sort of get their ballot and they'll say, oh, I guess I, you know, in the primary stage, they'll say, oh, I guess I get to choose among all these candidates, you know, and party doesn't matter anymore. And some people in the fall will say, oh, my gosh, I have two candidates of the same party. What's that all about? You know,
And somewhat to that point, Chad Peace from the Independent Voter Project. And again, we're talking here on this hour of forum about third parties in California under the new system of election rules. And some would say the demise of third parties. But Chad Peace, to Eric McGee's point about these same party elections. There are people who say that what has happened now is we have less choice. And I think you might have heard that from Michael Feinstein from the Green Party earlier. If I've got two Republicans, then that's not as much choice. Or I have two Democrats, that's not as much choice as a Peace and Freedom candidate, a Green Party candidate, an American Independent candidate.
Right. And I understand that, and I appreciate Michael's perspective. But remember, I think elections should be conducted from the perspective of the voters. First, to Mike's point about 500 Green Party candidates being elected in municipal elections. Well, almost all municipal elections are top two nonpartisan primaries. So I think that goes to our point, is that right now we have a system in traditional systems and all across the country where 95% of elections are actually decided in the primary. It's the same reason why when you go to Fox and MSNBC, you have red and blue maps, and there's a very few districts that are purple. What that means is that the actual candidates are being elected in the primary. So what Michael is arguing for is a symbolic place on the ballot, right, where people can make a symbolic vote. What we're trying to do is change the system in a meaningful way, where when you vote, your vote actually matters. And so I believe actually this could strengthen third parties. The third party, the chairman of the Libertarian Party in Washington, the other state to adopt it, just wrote a piece a few months ago saying how it's the first time there's a fair system. And what the third party should do is be strategic. I should see the Green Party should be very successful in San Francisco. And if they could strategize and form coalitions like they do in other countries he refers, a Green Party should be able to come in the top two in a district in San Francisco and force a conversation between the Democrat and the Green Party candidate.
Well, let's get Michael Feinstein on that point right there from the Green Party. Michael?
Yeah, with no disrespect to Mr. Peace, the idea that my right to my point of view is symbolic, I think Greens find that really, really, really offensive. If you're not part of the majority, you don't have any right to representation. This is entirely wrong. And on the point about the libertarians, they're part of a constitutional challenge filed here in California, Rubin versus Bowen, along with the Green Party and the Peace and Freedom Party, to challenge the constitutionality of top two. We believe it presents unconstitutional high thresholds to be on the general election ballot and is ultimately going to be overturned for that reason.
Kim Alexander from the California Voter Foundation, and I think actually we're going to have a lot of good spirited conversation here about those third parties there. But Kim, can I bring you in really quickly, because the fastest growing group of voters in California have completely detached themselves from a partisan affiliation. They are nonpartisan voters, or no party preference, as we call them in California. What do you hear from voters? I mean, what do you think the sense is of people detaching themselves from political parties?
We see that trend among young voters in particular. We've seen that spike. And so, you know, it's definitely the case that California is becoming more of a nonpartisan state than it used to be. But it's still the case that, you know, we have very strong parties and party alliances. And I think that one of the challenges of Prop 14 is that, you know, voters weren't directly asked, do you want to devalue the role of parties in elections? And that's essentially what Prop 14 did. Voters were told you're going to get more choices, which they have been given more choices in the primary and now fewer choices in the general. I think that it's been beneficial for voters to have this moderating ability in the primaries where more people get to decide who the final choices will be that go into the general, because there are a lot of people living in districts even without gerrymandering. We had a fair redistricting in 2011, and so we had very fair elections and incumbents that didn't have safe seats, and we saw some incumbents get unseated. And I think it was a combination of the fair redistricting in the top two. So in some ways, you know, you can see this moderating impact, but I think that the initiative, the proposition was written in 6 days, and, you know, there were a lot of new terms put into it, like getting rid of nonpartisan and instead using this phrase no party preference, which is kind of a mouthful and difficult sometimes for voters to wrap themselves around. The voter registration form was changed to I want to choose a political party to I will disclose a political party affiliation, like it's some secret or something. So I think that there's some language and terminology that's accompanied Prop 14 in the open primary process that has changed the nature, trying to change the nature of how we conduct elections in California that people still don't fully understand, except for the third parties.
Eric McGee from the Public Policy Institute. And again, we're talking about the fate of third parties in California, and we're going to take your calls and comments here in the second half of this hour. Eric, what is the practical impact then of these changes in the election rules, the top two primary in particular so far? Are we seeing real change in terms of like who gets elected, what happens? I mean, and I think I know where you're going to go because you and I've talked about this before. But what are we seeing?
Well, so there's a number of expectations that you might have, right? So one is that voters are making kind of nuanced distinctions between candidates in terms of ideology in the primary stage. I think there's pretty good evidence that it's hard for voters to do that beyond the kind of the gross labels of parties. The second thing is that the people that you're electing out of this system are more moderate. I think that question, there's different perspectives on it. There's been some research on that sort of presents both sides of that issue, and so I would consider that kind of still an open question, a very important one. And then there's this question of just kind of competition and choice, and I think there's no doubt that that the system has encouraged more same party challenges in a lot of seats. So oftentimes the incumbent will face a candidate from their own party who will challenge them, which didn't happen as often under the old system. And I think that the advocates of the top two would say that's a good thing, and others would say who cares. But I think it has actually it's part of what has led to all of these same party contests in the fall.
Fair to say though that choice is somehow in the eye of the voter, isn't it? I mean, it's somewhat of a subjective term, very briefly here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and the key question is, with these same party contests in the fall, are voters really feeling like, oh, hey, now I get a choice, whereas I didn't have one before because it was so obvious, or I don't know how to distinguish these candidates. They're both from the same party. What does this mean to me? Right.
We're talking about the fate of third parties under California's new election system rules, particularly the top two primary, where only two candidates are on the November ballot. A lot of third party people have been unhappy about that. We'd like to know what you think about third parties, their viability, their future in California. You can join us toll free at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or send us a tweet at KQED Forum. I'm John Myers. This is Forum. I'm John Myers, and for Michael Krasny this morning, we're talking about third parties in California, and more specifically, does the new top two primary system in this state, does it block them? Does it basically mean their demise in the years to come? We have a number of guests who we've been talking about. We're going to bring in your comments and phone calls here in just a moment. Again, our phone number, 866-733-6786. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can comment online on our website. You can tweet us at KQED Forum. You've got a lot of ways to participate. Once again, let me tell you who's joining us for this hour. Michael Feinstein is the state coordinator of the Green Party of California. He's the former mayor of Santa Monica. Chad Peace is a legal strategist for the Independent Voter Project, a nonpartisan group that has been advocating for the top two primary system. Eric McGee, a policy fellow from the Public Policy Institute of California, has done a lot of research on the top two primaries. And Kim Alexander, the president of the nonpartisan California Voter Foundation, all here to talk about this. Michael Feinstein from the Green Party, let me come back to you for a moment here. Because one of the things that comes up often is whether third parties are fielding candidates, specifically in primary elections. As I have seen quoted before, another third party member, a prominent member in Washington state, suggests that primaries are where third parties now can live in these top two systems, that the voter turnout is lower. You may have a better chance to appeal to win something. So why not field more candidates in those primary elections? There were not a lot of third party candidates on those primary election ballots in some parts of California.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the number of signatures we need to get on the ballot has gone up 7,000%. What that means is our candidates now have to spend a lot of their money in order to pay for the fees of getting on the ballot, where we used to get enough signatures in lieu to not have to do that. The result then is the expensive fee for a ballot statement in the primary means we can't afford the 250 words we used to be able to use to reach all the voters, and now our statewide candidates only can afford a couple of dozen. And top two primary means now you're campaigning to all the voters instead of the primary, instead of just in your own party. So that vastly increases the cost of running in primary. It's against grassroots campaigning because you have to have much more money and have it earlier. So the result is extremely difficult to get on the ballot. And then you're only on the ballot when you qualify in March until June. And then you're lost in this jungle primary among 10 or 15 candidates from other parties. Had these folks at least had some sense of democracy, they would have used ranked choice voting in the primary so people could have at least ranked their choices there. So it's a disincentive for us to run in these races. It's making it harder for us to recruit candidates entirely. And I also just have to challenge Mr. Alexander's point about a moderating influence in the primary. It's entirely random what happens. Congressional District 31 in Riverside County in 2012, it is a majority Democratic district with a plurality Latino. There were four Democrats, two Republicans. The four Democrats split their vote, and you had two Republicans on the general election ballot, one of whom went to Congress in a majority Democratic district, because the randomness of top two means there's no guarantee of who comes out. We saw the same thing in the controller's race this year. A few hundred votes would have meant a difference between two Democrats or a Democrat and Republican. That's not democracy.
Michael, let me jump in there, and I can also point as an observation to that congressional race in Southern California. Some people would say Democrats did a pretty lousy job of putting their candidate up, but that may not all be random. It may be the party didn't do a great job there.
You can't say it's both about having more choice.
Fair enough.
Parties should have fewer candidates.
Okay, fair enough. Just an observation there from your friendly forum host. We've gotten a lot of people here involved and want to go to phone calls too, but we asked our listeners on social media, are third parties valuable? Some of the responses. Noel tweeted to us that, yes, they are. Fewer choices can lead to voter apathy. Another listener wrote in that a third party will never survive in a winner-take-all system because the deck is stacked. Numbers show 51% wins, not 34%. From Facebook, we had Mike who said, how can this not favor the two major parties, this system? It looks like a step backward. Chad Peace, you've been a proponent of top two. What do you say about these folks who say there's less choice and that it does favor Democrats and Republicans?
Sure. And first address, a lot of the angst directed at top two, such as it being a first-past-the-post system or not having instant runoff, I think those are all arguments that are really addressing a different problem. What we're trying to do, is create a system, like I said, that's about people again. And to go to Michael's point about, you may have a District 31 here, well, under traditional systems, whether it's in California or other states, you have primaries that are where the leader of a party is being elected in the primary by turnouts as low as 8%, for example, in New Jersey. And you have that candidate de facto winning at the primary stage. So to go to his point about if we really believed in democracy, I think we absolutely believe in democracy, and that's why we think we should have a system that treats every voter, people who are the root of democracy, the same. parties, we absolutely believe in the right of parties and the purpose of parties and third parties. We're very supportive of them, but they should compete on a playing field where they're treated as the private associations that they are. And when the state funds and administers an election system, its only obligation is to individual voters, and they need to create a fair playing field. Our argument is that top two created a fair playing field. Are there other systems, instant runoff, approval, ranked choice, all these that should be explored by California and other states? Absolutely. But we wanted to begin turning the wheels to start thinking about our elections and the obligation of a state to its voters and put the voters' rights ahead of those of private parties.
Chad Peace from the Independent Voter Project. Let's go to the phones here and see what you have to say about third parties and their viability in the system. We go first to KC, who joins us from Pleasant Hill this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Hey, first of all, I'll be the first to say that I think that the system needs continued reform and that it has to be more accessible to other parties, to third parties, to outside parties besides the primary two. But I'll also say that many of those other parties are so narrowly defined in terms of agenda and platform that they don't end up being very representative of a broad group of people. And I also don't really appreciate some of the hyperbole that I'm hearing from the Green Party representative, where he's saying that it's an attack and that he's not represented. We live in a democracy. There are tons of people that live in districts that are represented by people of a different party, and it's incumbent upon them to communicate with those representatives and make voice heard.
Okay, Casey, thank you. Michael Feinstein, I'm sure you've got several comments there, but let me try to focus you in on one thing he said, which Casey's point is that he thinks that the positions that the parties maybe are too narrow in some ways, and that's why they don't have more support, some of these parties.
Yeah, the Green Party is in 100 countries around the planet. And where we are in a fair voting system, we have representatives at state and federal levels in dozens of countries because we have a platform that is broad enough to satisfy many, many voters. It's only in the winner-take-all single-seat district countries like the United States where we don't have broad representation.
Okay, Michael Feinstein from the Green Party. Let's go to another call here. Paul from Oakland is on the line. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, the person defending top two, it's just absurd. It's Orwellian doublespeak to say that they are supporting democracy. They're talking about limiting choice. It's deliberate. The Republicans and Democrats have deliberately eviscerated the system and caused third parties to basically be on life support. It's going to be very difficult for Peace and Freedom and Green and Libertarian candidates to survive. And in the primary that kicked us off the ballot this year, only 15% of the people bothered to vote. So we have a ridiculously tiny percentage of people turning out to vote, and for the top two primary proponent to say that they're supporting democracy is just absurd. It's outrageous. I mean, they deliberately are trying to kill voter choice. They're shutting people out of forums and debates. They're making it harder and harder for third-party candidates. I congratulate Mike Feinstein for fighting the good fight for the Greens and the Peace and Freedom Party, which I know he has done for decades, and we need more people like him in office, not more conservative people, you know, from the Democrat and Republican Party who really have destroyed democracy in our country.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much for that call. Chad Peace, I think this is directed right at you. He thinks that this is that the goal here is to kill third parties. He says it's by design. What do you say to that?
Sure. I think the current partisan system has really created the divisiveness. I think that's articulated really in that attack, I guess, on our position. Is one of the things we're trying to do is create a more civil discussion. I think we do that by creating a process that's about people and encourages candidates to talk to voters outside of their party. I think when you talk in terms of, oh, all that matters is me and my party and my voters, and we vote as a group, we create a democracy that puts people into corners. And so you end up with an attacking culture. You know, I think that discussion was an attack. I think what he's confusing a difference of opinion on an evil intention. I think the last intention is, I'd like to also qualify this, but both the Republican and Democrat parties have been adamant opponents of top two as well, not just the third parties. So it's not really straightforward to say that this was written for the Republicans and Democrat parties when they've challenged it at every corner. I think disagreements of opinion should be encouraged. We should talk about them in a civil manner and not look at each other as enemies, but people with different opinions. And I think that's what we're trying to do by creating systems that are about people rather than putting parties' interest ahead of them.
Chad Peace from the Independent Voter Project. And let me read a couple of emails that have come in. Jim writes to us, "The top two primary system is the best change to California politics in decades. My congressional district saw a big upset with the defeat of the old poll, Pete Stark, by Eric Swalwell. Would have never happened in the old system," says Jim. "Top two primary system would be a potent antidote to the calcified, gerrymandered districts if other states adopted it." And then Don tweets to us, "How did it get to be top two instead of top three or top four? Wouldn't ranked choice be better?" That's another whole show on ranked choice, but more choices there. And Kim Alexander with California Voter Foundation, doesn't all of this kind of come back to the voter at a certain point? The voter needs to be educated about the candidates, about their issues. The system is important, and we are talking about the system, but at the heart of all of this, it's the voters knowing what they're doing.
It is, and what I find hopeful about the change that we're seeing is that we do see politicians having to fight harder to get elected. You know, they don't have a safe run in June if you're in a district that leans heavily Democratic or Republican. And we do see in Sacramento, we see legislators really looking over their shoulders more than they used to. I mean, I want to say in response to Michael Feinstein, our what we see as a potential change with top two is not necessarily going to how the election contests are being run, but really what happens once people are elected and how they behave once they are in office. And just to share one example, we worked on a bill with Senator Lou Correa, Senate Bill 27, which changed the law so that nonprofits, people couldn't hide proposition money behind nonprofits anymore and we'd have full disclosure. We needed a two-thirds vote on that bill, and we got it from a couple of Republicans who were in districts where they needed to be concerned about what all voters thought of them and not just the Republican voters. And I think, you know, so I do see that has that impact. And I also can see, you know, as we go into this election season where we don't have races at the top of the ticket that are necessarily going to draw a lot of voters out, the fact that we do have so many competitive congressional and legislative district contests across the state, in part because of fair redistricting and in part because of the top two, I think is going to draw a lot of voters out that maybe otherwise would be sitting out.
And let's go back to our phone calls. Again, we've been talking about the fate, the status of third parties in California, especially after we changed the electoral system to only bring two candidates to the November election. Our next caller is in Oakland, and it's Nick. Nick, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Great topic. Real quickly, I was a lifelong Democrat, and I jumped to an independent. And the reason why I did that very specifically came down to the fact that I was so tired of this Coke and Pepsi, and it's all about party, and it's a power grab. The last person who actually caught my attention was Ron Paul, and I watched him get shut out by the media. He had enough support and everything, and I think that it is more than time that we've actually stepped up, gave people an actual choice, not Coke and Pepsi. Some people like seltzer. And I think it's time that we honestly get to that place, because there are many Democrats who side with Republican issues. There's many Republicans who also have, you know what I mean, some liberal thought. But problem is that we're stuck in this two-party system that's getting us absolutely nowhere.
So, Nick, do you get seltzer from the current system? So to keep your beverage analogy going?
No. You get Coke and you get Pepsi. I mean, you know, you get to see the advertisement for seltzer, but the reality is it all comes down to Coke and Pepsi, and that's it.
And I'm talking specifically about California now, this top two system. You don't think that's giving you that choice?
No. Well, here's the thing. I think that it anything that's moving us in a forward direction is a positive step, as far as at least having the conversation. But right now, it's so entrenched that, you know, you're still always going to end up where the big money is still coming in there and cracking it up. And I think bringing anything to the forefront that is going to, and you mentioned it a minute ago, where it's going to educate the voters, that really brings an honest and equal, fair across-the-board conversation, I think that that is absolutely the only way to move forward, and it's a positive step.
Okay, Nick, thank you. Let me go back to our guests. Michael Feinstein from the Green Party of California. A couple of things here I want to ask you about. Ryan wrote us from Twitter that he's an independent because his vote is green was only symbolic. This is a phrase you heard before that you were unhappy about, that the system needs to be more open to third parties, not eradicate them. But again, we have seen all these voters move into this unaffiliated, nonpartisan status. Does that say anything to you as somebody who believes in a partisan system?
That the engine of our democracy is broken. The current energy is the single-seat, winner-take-all system. And if we went to a multi-seat system with proportional representation, voters, like you just mentioned, would find parties that represented their point of views that could actually get people elected. And we should not confuse competitive elections with representative elections. Representative elections, you mentioned libertarians before, Greens and libertarians, if we had representation, we would get together on opposing wars that Democrats and Republicans support. We would support civil liberties together that Democrats and Republicans don't. There would be all kinds of more play in our political system if the system was truly representative.
So talk really quickly before I go to our other callers and our other guests. I do want to point out here that it's very important, I think we need to point out, that the system for third parties, which has been criticized since the top two primary system came in, because let's back up actually and explain to the audience here a little bit. So the voters voted on Proposition 14 in 2010. But it was not the only thing that changed the election system. There was another law signed into by the governor that made some of these changes that have impacted third parties in terms of how third parties qualify, keep their viability. There was also a change to whether you could have a write-in candidate, which you can no longer have on the general election ballot. But Michael Feinstein, Jerry Brown signed into law a bill just this year that does give some help to third parties, does it not? Could you briefly explain what the benefit of that was?
Yeah, we thank Assemblymember Rich Gordon from the South Bay up there in the San Francisco area for having a bill that lowered the threshold for the number of party registrants we need to stay in the ballot, because previously the way that we stayed in the ballot was getting 2% in a statewide general election. And now we're not on a general election ballot statewide in November, so we couldn't have qualified that way. So that was great as far as keeping us legally qualified parties, but the trouble is the barriers to actually running for office in the primary still remain very high, and that's why you've seen the drop of candidates from about 130 a year down to about a dozen a year between our four smaller parties.
Larry, one of our listeners, tweeted in, more people turn out in November than in June. Why not just do away with primary elections? Save money. Primaries are an anachronism. And Lisa wrote in by email, backers of Top 2, and Chad Peace, let me give this to you. Please explain to me how making it virtually impossible for anyone other than an established, well-moneyed, major party candidate to qualify for the primary ballot is more fair and open.
Well, first, I disagree with the premise that it makes it virtually impossible. Like I said, I think part of what needs to happen amongst the third parties is to see the system. It is that Republicans and Democrats have given an unfair advantage, not only in the laws, but also in the media and the public dialogue. And what we tried to do is chip away at the initial barriers. This is the first time that barriers to entering the primary are exactly the same for every party candidate, every independent candidate, and it treats all voters the same. So I would say the first thing is I think the Libertarians and the Greens, instead of spending the limited resources fighting what I think is a positive change, they should look at this as an opportunity to build coalitions and get a Green elected in San Francisco and get a Libertarian elected down in San Diego and use this to their advantage and look at the opportunity. The second point is one of the callers, I think, made some excellent points. Nobody is suggesting that Top 2 is the end-all, be-all in the perfect system, but I think it progresses the discussion about who should our elections serve, and I think they should serve people. And so the points Michael's making about instant runoff and proportional representation I think are great. I think we should engage that discussion, we should have that discussion, and we should look at the Top 2 as a catalyst for that discussion. The Independent Voter Project also filed a lawsuit in New Jersey saying that the state has unconstitutionally given the Democrat and Republican parties exclusive access to the electoral system. I would welcome the support of the Greens and the Libertarians on that lawsuit. What we're trying to do with the Independent Voter Project is engage the same conversation, which on my final point is we should be talking about this as having opinions and how do we move forward, and not that we're necessarily opponents, even though we may appear to be in this narrow debate on Top 2.
Let's get some other folks in the conversation here. First, Arthur in Palo Alto. Arthur, good morning.
Yes, thank you very much. This is a very interesting conversation. And one of the changes to the Top 2 primary that could very well help third parties is, excuse me, if you allow voters in the primary to vote for more than one candidate. and then the top two vote getters would win. So this way, in the case in Southern California where there were four Democrats running, you could vote for more than one Democrat, and then they would have the fact there were so many Democratic candidates would have been eliminated as a problem,
okay,
in that anomaly. And in the case of San Francisco, if people were allowed to vote for a Green Party candidate and a Democratic candidate, then that would be more likely for the Green Party candidate to advance the general election.
Okay, but Arthur, let me just hold you there because we've got a lot of people who want to get a comment in really quickly. And I appreciate that. You're talking about an expansion of the way that we have people on there. Eric McGee from the Public Policy Institute. I mean, as you look at data, are there any other systems out there that we could be examining? Is anybody doing something to that extent? Of course, there's ranked choice voting and other things, but is anyone really broadening that out in that way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, especially at the local level in terms of alternative voting systems. And I think what the caller is describing is something sort of like approval voting, maybe. But there's a lot of different systems out there. I think that now that we have the top two, there's some merit in having a discussion about whether we should switch to those kinds of systems. And they might help prevent some of these sort of weird outcomes like Congressional District 31. So for sure, yeah.
Let's go to the calls again. Lori in Sacramento. Lori, good morning.
Good morning. One thing I haven't heard anyone mention is the rise of more people getting their information off the internet and coalition building through Facebook and other social media means. I think this mechanism would actually help third-party candidates, maybe not in this election cycle or the next election cycle, but as the millennial generation ages and, you know, those voters take a bigger stake in California politics,
okay,
I see third-party candidates getting stronger and, you know, the traditional Democrat Republicans actually probably getting a little bit weaker.
Okay, Lori, thank you. And you've got a little bit of a bad phone line, so we're gonna let it go at that. But again, trying to expand that reach to third parties. Let's go to Jeff in Roseville. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I beg to differ, and this is not an attack on Mr. Peace, but anytime that you have two parties, two candidates only at the final election, then it becomes this polarity that exists in our political system. And therefore, you know, there's no discussion involved. Everybody's attacking everybody else. So then there is no differing of opinion and trying to solve any problem. All right. And then the other part is that how is it cheaper? How is it cost effective to have now two elections instead of just one? We have busy lives. And there's a huge assumption that, you know, the people who vote in the primary is going to vote again in November. Maybe they were busy or they couldn't, you know, look at the election on the primary, and now they're, you know, and then they're going to vote in November, and then the candidate disappears.
Okay. Jeff, thank you. I guess that's one of those questions, too, about how many elections can people actually dial into. Let me go to Milton in Los Altos really quickly. Milton, good morning.
Good morning. I dislike the top two system. The problem with third parties that nobody has mentioned is that people won't vote for them because they're wasting their vote. So the way to get around that, I suggest, is to have a top five primary system and then make the final election ranked choice. So you could vote for Nader and not worry about it. You could also vote for Gore, or you could vote for Ron Paul and also vote for Romney.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, that doesn't work.
Kim Alexander, go ahead.
Yeah, just to clarify, that doesn't work for the presidential contest. And actually, the top two primaries don't apply to the presidential contest, which is one of the challenges we have in explaining to voters that you have the right to vote for any candidate in any office on the ballot, except for that one, which is at the very, very top of the ticket. So, you know, we don't have the ability at the state level to dictate to the national parties what their primary election rules are. So but in the rest of the contest, what he's suggesting could be done.
Okay. A couple of other comments that have come in here as we get up to the top of the hour. From our website, Bob writes in, small parties are small because they have fringe ideas. Make your party appeal to more people. Get on the November ballot. Fringe voters can always vote for you in the primary, as I do. And Bob says he's a Green Party member. Michael Feinstein, he's a fellow Green Party member there, but he says small ideas from small parties.
A voter or oriented democracy gives all voters a chance to vote for and elect somebody who represents their views. The current system says unless you're part of the majority, you're not entitled to representation. That is the opposite of the direction we need to be going, whether it's top two or the system that we had before. That's why Greens favor proportional representation with multi-seat districts for legislative races and ranked choice voting for single-seat offices like governor and president.
Okay. A couple of other comments really quickly here. Nick writes in, and Nick, I think, is a supporter of the top two system. What's changed? No one voted for third parties before top two, and I don't think we're going to resolve this, by the way, by the time this hour is over. No one votes for them now. I live in Santa Clara. Third-party candidates didn't muster up enough votes to even come in fourth. Now I think I have choice. And Sean writes that the top two primary system, this is someone who has problems with it, is blocking real political choice. Choice doesn't occur when your options all hold the same or moderate political opinions. Very quickly here to the phones and Luma from San Francisco. Luma, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm with the Freedom Socialist Party. We are definitely a minor party who would like to be on the ballot. And the current electoral system is designed to get Democrats and Republicans elected. There is nothing fair about the current system for minor parties. You know, in Europe, they do have a multi-seat proportional representation system. Who gets to talk on television is equal. Minor parties have as much TV, radio, airtime as the, quote, major parties. They don't even really break things down into major, minor. So this is a huge ripoff of democracy for, you know, people in the United States, and we need a change from top to bottom.
Okay, Luma in San Francisco, and I think that may be the last word there. And she is representing a third party or a party that hopes to have formal recognition. I think that's appropriate. We'll let her have that last word there. I want to thank all the guests as we've talked about the fate of third parties and the top two primary system. Eric McGee in studio from the Public Policy Institute of California. Kim Alexander from our bureau in Sacramento of the California Voter Foundation. Michael Feinstein, the state coordinator of the Green Party of California. Thank you, Michael. Spirited discussion. And Chad Peace from the Independent Voter Project, which was a big backer of the top two primary system. Also, Chad Peace, thank you for joining us by phone. In our next hour of forum, we're going to talk to some of the candidates on the November ballot. Two in particular, two Republicans, Ashley Swearingen, the candidate for state controller, and Neil Kashkari at the bottom half of the hour, candidate for governor. Should be interesting. I'm John Myers. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.